Hey everyone, welcome to Connect the Dots. I'm Jeremiah Garcia, your host from Guide Dogs of Hawaii. This is a safe space for blind and visually impaired individuals to come together, share experiences, and learn from each other. Today, we're going to talk about a career that many may not have heard about, which is a contracting professional. A contracting professional's role is to acquire goods and services that will provide the best value for the government. My guest, who prefers not to use her name, happened to discover this career while searching and has enjoyed her career ever since. Let's get right into this conversation by asking, what inspired you to go into this career?
What inspired me is, after graduating from college in business, it was something that I thought was interesting. To be honest, I didn't know exactly what it was all about when I saw the announcement. But I applied for it, and it turned out to be such a fascinating field, contracting.
There are so many sought-after fields in business like accounting and administration, so it is understandable that the contracting professional position stuck out. With so many areas in business you could have chosen, what intrigued you about contracting professional that drove your career choice?
Yes, I was looking at various things, personnel management. I was looking at accounting, finance, because it's kind of in the business area. But then when I saw contracting, I thought, oh, what is that? You know, it sounded a little different. So what we do is we basically go out and issue solicitations, what we call it, to contractors. They propose on it. We negotiate and all that. And then we finally award the contract for the government. So it said all those words in there, but you don't know what you're getting into until you actually, when I actually applied for it and got hired. So, but I really like it. It turned out to be a very, in my lane and in the area that I'm interested in.
Your career calls for soliciting and negotiation fees for services and goods for the government, which I'm sure is not small potatoes. What education or training is required for this type of career?
So nowadays, all it takes is a bachelor's degree in anything. Back then, it was a bachelor's degree in business, with an emphasis on business. So it's like I said, that's what was needed at the time. So which I got, and then I applied for that job and got the job. But that was many, many years ago. But that's what prepared me through formal education, the formal education aspect of it. And then after that, you know, it was an intern program. So then they taught you the technical piece of it, the day-to-day aspects of contracting.
The internship sounds like it was an entry level into the position, which I imagine gave you the opportunity to try it out. In respect to government contracting professionals, could you share how the internship helped you secure your government position?
In the government, they have these intern programs. And once you are in the program, the idea is you pretty much stay in that career field. So I didn't really have to, I had to compete for promotions and things like that. But once people see what you're able to do through the intern program, and I was stayed in the same office, and just, applied for promotion. So I didn't really have to go look for outside of my organization.
I'm betting that a person would at least like math in order to work towards a degree in business. I'm sure many listeners are probably saying, ugh, because math for the blind and visually impaired can be quite a challenge. What aids or strategies did you use during college?
I struggled, especially when it came to anything that had a lot of visuals, like accounting, any kind of math and stuff like that. But I liked math, so a lot of it was just studying on my own, studying on my own. Back then, there wasn't all these assistive software. There was some, I forget what they call it, Deck Talk or whatever, and it was challenging. I did get one-on-one with some math and statistics professors, and they're very understanding. In fact, they would help write for me notes, large, because I'm not completely blind, but I have always been visually impaired, very poor, very low vision. So other than that, that's the kind of help I got. A lot of it was more personal, just one-on-one, getting to know the instructors, and I was just very fortunate to have very good instructors.
What about financial aid? Were you able to take advantage of any financial aid programs?
Well, when I was going to college, it was a state law where they waived, I guess, the tuition for my bachelor's degree. When I went for my master's, then it was on my own. But, you know, through Ho'oponopono, but Ho'oponopono at the time didn't have to pay anything because they, you know, it was a state law. I think it's changed many years ago that you have to either go get through Ho'oponopono or something else. But my bachelor's was basically pretty much paid for. And the separate instructions was through Kokua and Komomai or something like that. It was called at least when I was going to Leeward for the special assistance. But the actual degree was all pretty much waived by that state law.
Now that is interesting. I wonder if the free tuition program you're talking about is the same as the Hawaii Promise Scholarship Program that similarly offers tuition waiver and assistance with books. How one is going to pay for their higher education is often the deciding factor on whether one gets a higher education. So it is a good thing when our listeners hear that assistance is available. Taking all that knowledge into the workplace must have helped you design the path in your career development. Would you share your experience in working with the federal government?
So I started, actually I didn't start, my very first job was just getting my foot in the door, yeah. So I was like a housing clerk. And it was through that, they have a program where, I think they call it Schedule A, they still call it that, I believe, where you can, they kind of like try you out. And if you're disabled, you can get in without taking all those exams and all that. And then they see how it works out. And after you pass that, then I applied for this contracting career field, which I've been in for like 35 years. It's been a long time since I've been in contracting. But I started off as a housing clerk, which I would encourage a lot of folks to do that because, I don't know, working for the government, of course, there's a lot of other opportunities out there, but the government is very good with EO and things like that, and to help people with disabilities. There's a computer assistive program that you apply for assistive software and things like that. They don't give you everything, but they really do a lot more than I would say maybe a private company, just because it's like a separate budget that's allotted through legislation.
You just mentioned that the housing clerk was your entry level in overtime. You climbed the ladder to the position of contracting professional, which you now hold. Some people would go right into a position such as the contracting professional straight out of college because of the credentials. Yet, you started at an entry level housing clerk. Can you share how this route worked for you? And would you recommend this to others?
It was just like to get my foot in the door. That's when I had graduated from college, and I had to start somewhere, and the only way was to get in. It was really entry level job, and it was fun. You know, I met a lot of good people and kind of got to understand the military a little bit better, because we would service military personnel when they came in and they needed housing, furniture at the time. That was furniture when they first come on island. So it was very different, very, very different. In terms, that one had little, it was not as visual, I would say, as contracting. Contracting is very visual, but there's now with all the technologies, there are ways, it's very helpful. There are ways that folks could learn it.
For those of us with vision loss, completing tasks often takes time and the use of alternative methods. Technology has only advanced within the last 20 years, so I am curious to hear how you manage through your education and work being that involved in a lot of math and visual information.
It's hard because other people who don't know or don't use it, they don't understand. And I think what they do is they show like, see, look, it works, you know, and it reads some stuff, but it doesn't read everything. So, and that's the thing. I've been trying to work with the Army to see a way of getting maybe blind people to help test it before they pay the contractor for the training they created that's not Section 508 compliant, because they can say all day it's Section 508 compliant, but until the user says it's not, then, and I'm pretty sure I'm using it right, you know, and in fact, I got somebody to help look at it too, and they said, no, it's not reading. It's not the way, and they blame it on the software. They always say, it's your software. Something's wrong with your software. I said, no, there's nothing wrong with JAWS. It's the way that the web page is designed. But it's hard to explain that to somebody who is not blind or who is not visually impaired and uses JAWS.
I can imagine how limited the hand magnifiers must have been, and then have a variety of assistive technology options become available. With these advanced technologies, have you found new challenges?
I did. So I'll be honest, I'm not very real super proficient. There's so many people out there that are really good with JAWS, yeah. But I did get through the CAP, it's called that computer assistive or accommodations program, the government. So I did get a trainer a couple times, and you know, she came out, she was a VI teacher. She came out and helped me with it. And you know, she was saying too, and you know, unless you use all the features, you kind of tend to forget how to use it, but I manage, you know, but without it, I would not be able to do my job. It's not like humanly possible. She even told me, she goes, I don't even know how you do this. The volumes of paperwork, yeah. For even a sighted person, it's overwhelming, and the emails and all that. But without JAWS reading all those emails to me, I could not read it. It would just be exhausting. If I were to just go up like 1 inch from the screen and try to read all that stuff. So it saved me. It really saved me to continue my job.
People seeking job opportunities also look at what benefit package the employer might offer. Can you share what benefits an employee may gain from working as a civil service employee?
Federal government probably has one of the most sick leave and annual leave, and people make a joke, it's like, well, when do you work? You have so much leave. But you know, we do have a lot of leave. We have I think after so many years, I forget how many years it was, 10 years or 15, you get 8 hours per pay period. So like now I have like 2,000 hours worth of sick leave that I haven't used because I have enough annual leave I use. So it's a lot. It's a lot of benefits, good medical and everything. You know, the dental and vision is not the best, but it's okay. Yeah, a lot of leave, that's for sure. More than, you know, nobody's going to complain, but it's sufficient to keep a life work balance, so you can go on your vacation or you can just relax, you know, at home.
You have advanced from being one of the contracting professionals to being a personnel manager overseeing contracting professionals. I know that this is what you presently do, and it would be great if you could share some of the highlights about hiring and overseeing personnel.
Okay, so and to hire them, and I'm glad you asked, that's a really good question, because we're having so much struggles nowadays hiring. Not because it's just a different environment we work in, but mainly when I do the interviews, of course, you're looking for somebody who is technically competent in that job, whatever it is, whether it be contracting or something else. But, you know, people don't realize how important it is people's attitude and just their ability to communicate well. So in the interviews, all of those things come out, and you know, you can tell when the person is very positive and have a good attitude about things, and very humble. You know, humbleness goes a long way. It's good to be confident, but it's also good to be humble and want to learn, not like, okay, I know everything, nobody's going to tell me what to do, that kind of thing. So just for that personality. And then reference checks is a big thing. So we had like interns before in the job, and then they weeded themselves out or somebody weeded them out. But some of them just think, oh, I don't want to do this entry level thing. I want to do that. But in order to get to that, you have to do all the basic stuff and the fundamental stuff. And some people are just not willing to do that. You know, we even found some people, well, these weren't interns. They were like school, what do you call that? Student program where they would work for during the summer. And we found this guy sleeping or something, and he just wasn't interested, you know. And then as one of the engineers went to him and kind of took him under his wings and said, you know, no matter what job you do, you're always like on an interview, even if it's a job you're not crazy about, or you think it's so menial, just do the best you can because people are watching. So something like that, I guess it's just a matter of your day-to-day interaction with people. And a lot of it is that if you don't have the technical skills yet, and it's just, you're just coming in.
The standard work schedule used to be Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 in the office. Things have changed since the pandemic, as I'm sure your work schedule must have been modified. Can you share a typical day and whether you work remotely?
Okay, so now we're allowed to telework, so it's really helpful, right? But even if I wasn't teleworking, basically I go in, and a lot of times it's meetings after meetings, and looking on, first I do look at my calendar, right, to figure out what I got to do today, what meetings I have. So that technology, that really helps, right? Because before it was just kind of memory or looking at some calendar that I, manual calendar. And then a lot of emails, I mean, tons of emails, and all these taskers that we have to do, we have to report up. So preparing all that, preparing presentations to my boss and to headquarters, things like that. And just a lot of talking on the phone with employees, calling them, checking on how they're doing, what they need. They call me, have an issue, a problem, talk through it, and figure out what kind of courses of actions we have available to us. Yeah, a lot personnel stuff. A lot of my job is personnel related. I mean, we have a personnel HR person in our office, but a lot of things, because I'm the civilian, the senior civilian, you know, they kind of have to run it through me, or, you know, or some, it's not a typical day, but we, you know, sometimes it's interviews with people, hiring them. We have a lot of hires because we have a lot of people departing. It's a really good time now to get into the government because there's a whole bunch of people retiring, or there's people moving around because another place offers some other, what they call benefit, I guess, is more telework or remote telework.
Part of managing an organization is delegating duties. In your type of civil service working environment, how do you distribute the work, and what would you say you are largely responsible for in your current position?
Before, when I was in, you know, just doing contracting stuff, because now I help manage the organization. I don't do the actual contracting anymore. I used to do that on a day-to-day basis, but I don't really, I have a staff, right? I have a staff, so I have like a HR person and all that. So a lot of it, my job now is more overseeing and managing and kind of guiding and all that kind of stuff. So it's basically me, and there's my boss, and there's another gentleman who's, they call him the XO. He's kind of like the operations manager. So amongst us, but I'm the only civilian in that group. So a lot of the civilian stuff come to me, but I do have people that help me, absolutely. And they're, a lot of it is having a really good staff.
Military work requires vision. Active duty personnel, for example, have to be fully aware of their surroundings at all times. I'm curious to know how exposed they are to working closely with someone with vision loss. Do you have any observations you could share?
The military, sadly, but they don't understand visually impaired or blind people, because in the military, if you're visually impaired or blind, you're not even in the military, or you get kind of like honorable discharge, right? And so it's very different. So it's a struggle, like in terms of trying to explain to your boss that's military, you know, the blindness piece. I still struggle with it to this day. I went through many, many things with military, and they're very nice. They want to help, but they don't completely understand. And not that a civilian wouldn't, but civilian, you know, it's not like you kick them out if they're blind or visually impaired. We're the military, in the military world, they do. So it is different.
I have just learned that you've gone from an entry-level position and climbed the ladder to a leadership position, managing the organization. With all your knowledge and experience gained, what qualities would you say would make a good leader?
The qualities of a leader. So we, we try to teach folks what we call soft skills, because, you know, the technical is technical. I think being a leader, the important thing is being approachable, you know, being able to talk to people and they feel comfortable coming to you. And the other thing is humility, to be humble so that other people see that. And I don't know, humbleness, I think, just overall goes a long way. And also to just be setting a good example. You know, it's, no one respects someone who says that, but then they don't do it themselves, you know. So in terms of being accountable, so, you know, being on time, being there when the work, to roll up your sleeves and help when they need help, you know, just being a good role model. Nobody's perfect and all that, and just kind of understanding that everyone, as long as people have a really good intentions in mind and trying to move the organization forward. So those are the kind of things, I guess, as a leader, try to instill into people, and always think of the greater good. You know, we're all human, we're all kind of selfish, right? And, you know, to include myself, we're all selfish, but trying to always look for how we can help other people and how we can help the organization, rather than just focusing on what we want or what we or things that we want in our life.
You've been working for 30 years now and have experienced different levels of positions, which puts you in contact with many different people and experiences. Do you have a favorite part of your job that keeps you going beyond your 30 years?
Yeah, I really like the people, you know. Just looking back, I've met some awesome people throughout my career. And, you know, the opportunities, the government has given me a lot of opportunities in just terms of growing and learning. So yeah, that was my favorite part. I would never have been able to go to conferences and things like that. I think had I gone a different route, I mean, who knows, right? But I don't think I would have. So that was, I used to like to travel a lot. I don't like to anymore. It's just very tiring, but that was one of my favorite parts, and meeting new people, going to training, learning new things. Now most things are virtual, so I don't know. Some people like it, but to me, I don't learn as well, just everything online. I know that's the way of the time, so, but that was my favorite part, meeting people and traveling.
And what would you say is your most challenging part?
I would say there has been, you know, I don't want to make it sound like everything is all rosy and stuff like that. It's all perspective, but it has, you know. I have had a couple, I might as well just say, because run-ins with, and just kind of more recent, this one. I mean, I've been through my whole career and not too many issues. And then since especially this is for the blind, I don't want to go into too much detail, but there was some mocking because of my blindness at a very high level. And of course they try to make it like it wasn't, that's not what they meant. They're trying to help me and all that. So, but I had to stand up, and it was really hard because it was actually my boss and somebody at a high level military. And then I explained to them that I felt very, belittled by the treatment and things like that. So when it came to the blindness thing, I think it was very challenging, but I'm glad I spoke up and talked to them about it. I mean, I could have reported it and probably they would have gotten in really, really big trouble. But then I thought, okay, I'll try to and I don't know. I don't even know how much they learned from it, but I didn't want to ruin their career or anything like that. That wasn't my intent, but at the same time, I'm hoping that they learned. So when they deal with the next person who, you know, blind or vision impaired, they think twice before they treat them that way. So that was challenging. And all this stuff with the Section 508, it is a challenge. And I've been fighting it almost my whole career. but it's sad. I think through the whole process, I learned that when they changed the law and they decoupled the Section 508 with, I think it's 504 or something, now it's kind of like individually we have to fight for it, or it has to be like a class action suit. you know, before I think they were coupled together, so it had a little bit more teeth, the Section 508. So that's something that I would like to, you know, continue through some avenue to relook at that, because individually it's so hard. It's so hard individually to fight for anything. And when we can have one voice, it's a lot easier. And I didn't realize the nuances of that, but they did say that because the law was decoupled, this is kind of like the effect of it. We all got to fight ourselves just to get things to be compliant.
The career of a contracting professional sounds appealing, and the educational requirement is manageable. What advice would you give to someone with vision loss who might be interested in pursuing this type of career?
Education is so important in any job, I think. Well, some jobs you don't need it, I guess. But in my particular field, just get their bachelor's degree. Then from there, I mean, a lot of it is networking with the right people. And it's good to have blind friends, but it's also good to have sighted friends, you know, so they can kind of give you different perspectives. So that's what I would recommend. And just, you know, like anything else, just work hard. And a lot of it too is just being approachable, you know, being somebody, because sometimes, and it's not anyone's fault, of course, but we have a tendency, we feel uncomfortable, right? We don't want to stand out, and people just kind of wait and for people to come and talk to us. Or it's hard because we can't, you know, can't always see them, but something is just to get out there and just have a personality that people feel comfortable. And then that's how, you know, blind people are more approachable. Kind of get out there and be friendly, not be so rigid so that people are like, oh my gosh, I don't want to offend her, anything like that.
This has been a very interesting and informative conversation. What I find here is that there are opportunities in the federal government for blind and visually impaired individuals, which can open doors of opportunities for the BVI community, especially when the job can take you beyond Hawaii if you choose to or have to move to another state. Before we close, I want to ask you a couple of questions. What three words would you use to describe yourself as a child? And what three words would you use to describe yourself now?
I would say as a child, I was three words: aggressive, curious, and friendly. Now, I would say I'm assertive. I don't know if I'm aggressive so much anymore. It's kind of very similar, but I think I stand up for myself, not just attack. But I think I stand up for myself. Maybe it's more refined than aggressive, but I still have that personality in me. I think I'm compassionate, so it's maybe some people may not think, but I think I'm compassionate. It's kind of similar to friendly, I guess, or have care about people and want to help them if I can. And then the other thing, which is not the greatest, but I think I'm a little controlling and anxious. I worry a lot, so I want to make sure things are done a certain way, and I worry about stuff. I don't know if it's maybe more than the norm, but I'm working on that. But that's the three things I would say are the three words that would describe me. There's more, but those are the ones that come to mind.
It's fun to see how we develop over our lifetime from childhood to adulthood. In your case, it could just be that your assertiveness developed from learning about yourself and what you're capable of doing, giving yourself the confidence to be your own voice. As for your compassion, looks like your friendliness from childhood developed into someone who, as you pointed out earlier, is aware that it isn't all about you and there are other people in the world with greater needs. I want to thank you for this conversation. You have shared a lot for our listeners to think about as they decide what direction to go. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for the opportunity. And you know, I know I'm anonymous, but if anyone wants to contact you to talk to me more, I'm open to that, if that's what you folks, the intent of this. But yeah, thank you again. I really appreciate it. Guide Dogs has a terrific cause and something it's very important to me to help the blind community.
As we draw to a close with this episode, I want to thank you for joining me. I hope you enjoyed your visit and found useful information. We welcome your feedback at feedback@guidedogsofhawaii.org. It would be great if you would visit us on our social media platforms, such as Instagram and Facebook. You can find us by simply searching for Guide Dogs of Hawaii.